Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Untangled Resolution's presentation of The Breakup Whisperer. I am your host, Batabile Mtombeni, The Breakup Whisperer, and I'm coming to you live from the southern tier of New York State in the United States of America. So much can change as the result of a breakup, and that includes a change of residence. We are told that property values are the number one consideration when finding a new place to live. But what about the values of your heart? Today, I welcome Anderson St. James to the show. Anderson is an Atlanta-based lifestyle realtor. We're going to talk about what that means, about the values that influence how we experience breakups, and the value to consider when finding a new place to live. Do you have questions or comments for us? Dial 929-477-3697 to get into the comment queue. That's 929-477-3697. Our intro music is brought to us by the wonderful people at Purple Planet Music. That's www.purple-planet.com. The tune you're listening to is called Cool Struttin'. Sit back and listen while everyone gathers. We'll be with you in just a moment. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another wonderful episode of The Breakup Whisperer. I am so glad that you decided to join us to listen, whether you're listening live or you're listening on demand. I am very happy that you have decided to join us today. We are taking an unusual approach to talking about breakups. We are talking about breakups and real estate, which might seem totally unrelated to you unless you have had to move during the course of a breakup. Then you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. So I've invited the Atlanta-based lifestyle realtor, Anderson St. James, to the show to talk about adopting an holistic approach to finding a new place to live. We're going to start, however, by talking about how early exposure to relationships can shape our expectations and values regarding relationships and breakups. And then we'll talk about how our values can guide our search for a new home. Welcome, Anderson St. James, to the show. You are on the air. Hello.
Hey, how are you?
I am doing quite well, thank you. How are you?
We are doing quite well here in Atlanta, surviving the heat.
I can imagine. It's warm where I am, and we're out, you know, not too far from Canada. So I can only imagine how it is down there in Atlanta. And I also want to say welcome in the sense of congratulating you on your radio debut. I'm hearing this is your first time on the radio as a guest.
This is my first time. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Well, I am glad to be the person to help inaugurate you on the radio. Let's get to know you a little bit better. You told me a bit about your early influences and how they shaped your expectations regarding relationships, and we're talking especially about your parents and your grandparents as examples of how to have a successful relationship. What was their influence on your expectations in regards to relationships?
So growing up, my parents and my grandparents were married until the other person passed away. So I always thought that that's how relationships went, you know, through ups and downs, good and bad. You know, you stayed together and you worked it out. And that's always been my thought, my expectation, like, hey, this is how things roll in the real world. But what I found out is that not everybody had that same influence and not everybody had that same upbringing. So their outlook is completely different.
So what happens when your outlook that is about working things out and staying together comes in contact with, or, you know, you fall into a relationship with someone who has a different point of view?
So it leaves you at a point where you're just like, well, wait, what just happened there? You know, I thought we were supposed to work things out. And even in the beginning, when you get together with someone, you know, those are things that you talk about. You know, everybody has this expectation of, you know, the relationship is going to go this way or that way. But those are things that you discuss in the very beginning. And if we have discussed, you know, hey, if there's a problem, we're going to work this out. You know, we're going to be together. But then there's a curveball thrown in and the other person decides that they don't want to be there. You're left standing there like, well, wait, what just happened here? You know, that's not how things are supposed to be. So it leaves you blindsided. Like,
oh, yes. And this is, you know, what I'm coming on to with the idea of what goes on when a person is raised in a home where the parents stay together, the grandparents stay together. This is the tradition in your family. It's a great way to grow up. It's the model that is encouraged for everyone. Ironically, however, it leaves people who come from that background rather unprepared, or can leave them unprepared for a situation where their relationships don't work out. You know, how do you manage that? How did you manage that?
Well, I have been in that situation a number of times where I'm completely blindsided by a breakup. Didn't see it coming. Thought, you know, we're going to work this out. You know, if there's a problem, sometimes you don't even know that there's a problem and you're just completely caught off guard. And me personally, it leaves me stunned. And the only thing that I can think of is, if this person doesn't want to be here, then I'm not going to try to convince them to be here. So it's a bit of a mix of how I grew up and the real world, where I want you to stay, but I only want you to stay if you want to be here. I'm not going to try to convince you to be here.
Yeah, that's a profound lesson, and it's one of the basic core principles that I really want to get across with this show. It has to do with that idea that, you know, in many ways, we're encouraged by many different influences to try to make the person stay, to hang on to them, whether it be by emotional blackmail or it be by other means. The idea of breaking up has such a stigma attached to it often that folks don't have the point of view to have that very, from my perspective, mature and healthy attitude that says, I don't want to be in a relationship with somebody who doesn't want to be in a relationship with me. So,
yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
What happens is you really have to, it's about you. It's about you and protecting yourself and your emotions and your heart, and just being absolutely real with yourself and thinking, okay, so this person doesn't want to be here. What is it going to be like if I convince them to stay or try to get them to stay with me? You're not going to be happy with that. You're happy with the fact that they're with you, but then you're not really happy. And then you don't have the opportunity to go out and find your happiness because you wanted to hold on to this person.
Ah. Look at that. You know, we talk sometimes about people hanging on to things, and by so doing, they block their blessings.
Yeah.
And so it seems that this is what you're alluding to here, that by holding on to this person, you don't have an opportunity to go out and find your happiness.
That's right. And you can't be happy. I mean, you can be perfectly happy by yourself, but you don't know that because you've convinced this person to stay because, I don't know, you like their presence or you like the way they look or they buy you things or whatnot. But that's not what happiness is.
What is happiness?
Happiness is knowing that you are completely free and light and you smile for no reason and you're nice and you're pleasant. And happiness is when somebody looks at you from across the room, they can tell that you're happy. It's a feeling.
So,
you know, it's a state of being.
It's something that wells up from the inside then.
Absolutely.
Well, I we're talking about this now, and often it does take experience, it takes time, you know, life, to come to a place where you understand this. And I understand that for you, like you said, you know, you've been through this a number of times and that's allowed you to come to the place where you are. You had a situation where you went through a breakup that actually inspired you to move. You know, we're talking about improving a person's breakup experience by considering moving to another place. So you yourself went through an experience like that. Tell me a little bit about that.
So I was living in Detroit, and it was my first real, I mean, real relationship. We lived together, you know, we shared everything. And when the relationship was ending, I just felt, I felt broken, and I felt like, okay, life has really beat me down. Like, this is not fair. And so I was driving to work one day, and I thought to myself, you know what I need? I need to get out of here. I need a fresh space. I need somewhere where I can be free to be me, and I don't have the stigma of, oh, you know, I'm going to run into my ex, or, you know, he's going to call me, or, you know, whatnot. I don't have that stigma. I need a fresh space. I need a new space. I need to start over, and I need to discover myself. I need to discover what makes me happy. It's only when making yourself happy that you can then make somebody else happy.
Oh, you are so right about that. You know, it takes two happy people, it takes two healthy people to have a healthy relationship. And so it is important to be healthy and centered and content within yourself before trying to have a relationship with someone else. That's such wonderful wisdom that you're bringing up. So you decided that you needed to move. Where did you decide to go?
So I decided to move to Atlanta, and I can't believe it. I've been here 17 years, and it was November when I decided this, and I got into work, and I told my boss, hey, I want to transfer to Atlanta. I didn't know anything about Atlanta. I had never been there. My best friend lived here, but I had never been, didn't know anything about it. And so I finally got a transfer to Atlanta, and I felt like, okay, it's a brand new beginning. It's a brand new beginning. Oh, and so I do have to tell you that I did get a slight bit of revenge for my ex for the breakup. I made them pay the deposit on my new apartment.
Wait a minute. How did you manage that? I need to know.
So I guess they felt guilty. It was truly on them that that we were breaking up. They went outside of our relationship, and that's one thing that is, it's an automatic deal breaker for me. And I took advantage of that guilt, and I said, hey, this is what I need for my new apartment. And they wrote the check.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So self-advocacy, this is also a good thing, that in the midst of all of this, you're not going to allow yourself to be so broken and beaten down and, you know, feeling that you are less than somehow because somebody went out and stepped out on you in the relationship. You know, often folks are tempted to blame themselves for that. And it's not to discount what we contribute to our relationships, you know.
Right.
Everyone who's involved in a relationship, each person in the relationship contributes something to the health and wealth and the existence of the relationship, and then also to the end of the relationship. So I don't want to discount that. On the other hand, I applaud you for standing up and saying, you know what, I'm going to advocate for myself and get this done. So your former partner paid for your apartment. This is good. This is really good. So you moved to Atlanta, and you know, you've been there for 17 years, so obviously something worked for you. What was it about Atlanta that worked for you?
So I felt like, so since I had never been to Atlanta, I felt like it was brand new to me, and I could be me, whoever me was. I could discover who me, the me that I like, I can discover that person. And I discovered a lot of things just by being open and meeting people and deciding, you know, the person that I was when I lived in Detroit, that's not really who I wanted to be. You know, I was being that for other people. But living here, I felt like I can be free. You know, if I don't want to go to clubs, I don't have to. I'm not pressured to. You know, my friends don't make me do that. And I can discover new things. You know, I can discover art galleries. I can discover wine tastings or whatever, and discover, hey, do I like this? Do I not like this? You know, it was brand new to me. And I like that.
You know, it's so important that you're bringing that out as well. Often as human beings, and, you know, there are biological reasons for this that we'll get into in a different episode that's coming up. I'm going to be talking about the biology of fear and how that relates to how we manage relationships and breakups in particular. But we do tend to want stasis. You know, we want stability to be in the same place. At the same time, then we might be cheating ourselves off an opportunity to discover new things, to discover new things about ourselves and to have fun in different ways. And so, you know, it's sounding like you were able to do that for yourself. And now you apply some of that in your own work. Eventually you, I guess, changed professions, did you?
I did. So I worked for the government at that time, and I actually only stayed in Atlanta for about 7 months. So I got a promotion and moved to New Orleans. And about 3 years later, I left that job and said, hey, you know what? I'm moving back to Atlanta because I liked that place. I felt at home there. And so I came back here, and I've worked for corporate organizations and whatnot. And I said, you know, I always wanted to be a realtor. So I became a realtor. And then I thought, you know, I can help people discover things about the city that they never knew. And the thing that led me to that is when I very first moved to Atlanta, I moved to an apartment that was nowhere near anything that I did or enjoyed or, you know, liked. It was close to the train, so I could easily park at the train and get to work. But what I discovered is I was not really enjoying the city. I was not, as I say today, I was not living the Atlanta lifestyle. So I was just going to work and coming home. That's all I did. And so now I apply that because when somebody is either new to the area or need a fresh start, whether they've been here 10 years, you know, they've been in a relationship and now they need to, you know, find something new, I apply that now with people that I meet with my clients. You know, I help them live the Atlanta lifestyle. And it's not just a particular lifestyle. It's your Atlanta lifestyle. What do you want out of this city? You imagine you want to live. And you can live that here, but maybe you just need somebody to help you get it started. You don't know what direction to go.
Well, it's interesting. You're saying on the one hand that there are many Atlanta lifestyles. You know, you are going to tailor the approach that you take to the individual client. But I'm wondering, is there a sort of generic Atlanta lifestyle? Is there a soul or spirit of the city that you can describe for folks who might be going through a breakup like you were and are looking for a new place to move to restart their lives?
So I would say that if there was a generic lifestyle of the city, it is a fast-paced, truly southern city. You know, southern manners, southern people, southern food. I mean, it is just, it's a place you can feel comfortable. And even if you don't know what, you know, what your new lifestyle entails, here you'll feel comfortable. You'll feel comfortable enough to discover, because there are so many different parts of the city and different, like I say, heartbeats to the city. So you'll find your pace. You know, sometimes it takes a minute. You know, you might be here, you know, 2 or 3 years and think, okay, so now I've got my bearings and I'd like to be involved in this or that. You know, I'd like to visit more art galleries, or I'd like to be near the botanical garden because I really like that. And so for me, I meet with my clients and we might meet at a coffee shop or, you know, or even a bar or something. And I get to know them. Before I even talk about property or what area of the city, I get to know them, know who they are, what their likes and dislikes are. Where do their friends live? You know, do they like where their friends live? I want to know everything about you. And then what I do is I suggest areas of the city. You know, if you are, say, a young urban professional, but you don't really like the hustle and bustle, you want to be very comfortable and you want it to be quiet and relaxed, but yet you want, you know, a walkable area. And I'll say, okay, well, then you need to be in Virginia Highlands. You can walk to everything. It's very comfortable, but it's easy to get around the city from that area. So it's all about you and what your comfort level is and what you're hoping to get.
So as I'm listening to this, I'm thinking to myself, man, I wish I had somebody like you available to me when I moved. I was very fortunate.
That's exactly it. I said, man, I wish I had somebody like me when I was moving here, because they would have told me, don't move to that apartment. Like, that's not going to be for you.
I got lucky. I moved into an area that happens to suit me, but it was really sheer luck. It was very hit and miss in terms of that. But when if I had to do it over again and I didn't have you available, you know, maybe you need to do a book or a guide or something. But if I didn't have you available, you mentioned one of the possible set of attributes that one would consider and then match that to an area of the city, you know, if somebody who's not really into the hustle and bustle and so forth. But do you have a set of questions that you ask or, a list of issues to consider when folks are moving to a new place and want to make sure that they're matching up their greatest needs and wants to the neighborhood they are choosing?
So I always have my clients close their eyes and tell me, if you could live any life, like, what do you see your life as? And as they tell me, then I can kind of formulate what parts of the city would be good for them. And also that's influenced by what's going on currently in their life. Are they coming to me because they have had a breakup and now they need to change spaces? You know, say they live with their ex and now they want to move. Or maybe they work somewhere and it's not convenient. They're finding that they're not enjoying themselves. They're not happy. So I get them to tell me their story. Tell me what's going on in your life. What do you want? Are you happy? Because if you're happy where you are, maybe you just need, as my friend Michelle would say, maybe you just need a little foo-foo shishi. Maybe you just need a little something extra to bump you up.
Sure.
You know?
Right. And I so totally get that. You know, I went through an experience of my own with breaking up and moving and discovered that I did need to pamper myself a little bit. And it helped that I was in New York City at the time and there were lots of different things to choose from. So you're absolutely right. If a person especially is coming out of a situation where they've had it rough, maybe they need that frou-frou shishi. I love that way of explaining it. So then this approach that you've taken to helping your clients find the best place for them to live, you call that lifestyle realty, or you are the lifestyle realtor. Tell me more about that.
So I am the Atlanta lifestyle realtor, and we are helping people to live the Atlanta lifestyle they always knew they could. I mean, you moved here for a reason. You know, why did you move here? Did you go through a breakup and you moved here, or was it a job or family? Something brought you into the city, and now you need to discover your city. You know, Atlanta, I would say Atlanta is not just, you know, a city. It's a true lifestyle here in Atlanta. And I think there are other cities like that, New York. You know, that's a whole lifestyle.
And it is.
So you need to find, you know, what brought you here and what keeps you here. You
right.
know, so
right.
if we know what keeps you here, what's going to sustain you here?
Yeah.
And that's a whole other piece. What's going to sustain you here? Because if you're just living a humdrum life here, then you could be humdrum anywhere in the world.
This is true. And there is that aspect of as well, you know, if you were going to be humdrum and you could be humdrum anywhere, why then, and I'm going to bring this up because it is an issue for a lot of people, but why then pay Atlanta prices? So talk to me a little bit about that. How do you help your clients to navigate in a situation where they might need to be making choices between their aspirations in terms of lifestyle and the realities of their budgets?
So this, for me, this is an easy one. You know, somebody comes, you know, with their budget and say their budget is, you know, $250,000.
Mm-hmm.
But all the houses they like are $500,000. Okay, well, what do you like about that house? Do you know you can get those same attributes in this neighborhood over here you know, for $190,000. You know, or, you know, you can build a house in that neighborhood for less than what you're going to pay for this one. So it's about giving them options. You know, I have had clients that told me, this is my budget. That's okay. I'm going to show you houses in your budget. I go, no, that doesn't work for me. I need to up my budget.
Hmm.
You know, and still couldn't find anything. And the last client that I worked with wanted to spend, I think, $280,000. She ended up spending about $340,000 because the house was newly constructed. And she said, well, I'll pay more, you know, for new. So it's all about what your desires are and what your limits are.
Right.
So
right.
You don't always have to have, you know, that $500,000 house. What are you going to do with that? I always tell people, remember, you have to furnish it, heat it, cool it, and clean it.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, you don't need six bedrooms. It's one of you. What do you need six bedrooms for? So it's helping people come to that realization. You know, you want this because your friends had it and it was cool. Well, yeah, there's four of them in that house. There's one of you.
Hmm.
Okay, later, you get a man, you get married. There's two of you. You still don't need six bedrooms. And also, what else do you want to do? Do you want to travel? Because you have to consider that, too. That takes money. You don't want to be house poor.
Ah, yes. You know, so many people are enslaved, in a way, by their homes because they bit off more than they could chew. You know, the house is draining so much of their resources that there's nothing else
mm-hmm.
they can do but
absolutely.
The house.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wonderful. Well, I want to go a little bit deeper into how you counsel your clients as they're looking for homes, because not everybody listening is going to have access to you. And so I do want to help my listeners to think about those details, you know, think about how many bedrooms do you need and what does that mean in terms of your budget and so forth and so on. But I want to take a moment to first give out the call-in number again. If anybody wants to call in, the number is 929-477-3697. That's 929-477-3697. And we're going to take a little bit of a break. We'll be back in just a moment with Anderson St. James. You are listening to Untangled Resolutions' presentation of The Breakup Whisperer, a show dedicated to promoting healthy breakup culture. Untangled Resolutions' breakup coaching services can help you to figure out if you should break up, how to discuss breaking up, and how to nurture yourself after a breakup. Contact me, Batabile Mtombeni, The Breakup Whisperer, at welcome@123untangled.com. That's welcome@123untangled.com. Be sure to visit us on Facebook, like our page, and leave a note. Is there a topic you'd like us to cover? A guest you think would be great on the show? Please let us know. Facebook.com/123untangled. That's facebook.com/123untangled. And now, let's get back to the show. We are back with Anderson St. James, the lifestyle realtor who is based in Atlanta, Georgia, and we are talking about the various details that can be very helpful for folks who are looking for a new home to consider as they are looking for a new neighborhood to live in. You know, so many of us are focused on property values and, let's say, access to work and so forth, that we forget about the other parts of our lives that make it rich and fun and perhaps especially in terms of people who are going through breakups who need to restore themselves, to restore joy in their lives. We sometimes tend to forget to consider those things as we are looking for a place to live. That being said, Anderson, with your experience as a realtor, I am curious about those conventional things. that folks ought to consider when they are looking for a new place. You know, things like, do you help your clients by looking up crime statistics in the neighborhoods? Do those actually mean anything in terms of the real experiences of the people who live in the neighborhoods? Are you looking at construction? You know, when I'm going to walk through an apartment, what kinds of things am I looking for? So I'd like us to take a moment to talk about those, you know, nitty gritty little details that can also make or break a person's experience in their new home.
So, sure. So all those things will play a part into it. I never look up crime statistics for my clients. I do encourage them to look those up on their own. I do encourage them to drive through the neighborhood at all times of day. I encourage them to talk to the neighbors. You know, There's always a nosy neighbor that knows every single thing that goes down in a neighborhood.
Oh, yeah.
So crime is everywhere. And the crime, I truly feel like the crime statistics don't tell a whole story. So crime is everywhere. So talk to the neighbors. They'll tell you what the crime's like in a neighborhood. You know, they'll tell you, oh, this is such a great neighborhood. We look out for each other. Or, oh, my God, the crime is just rampant here. The police are here all the time. The neighbors will tell you everything.
Well, you know, and that's an interesting thing about crime. And I'm sorry, go ahead. I didn't realize that you hadn't finished. Please continue.
No, if you want to talk about crime, let's talk.
Well, sure. So here's an interesting take on crime, I guess, if you will. I lived in Harlem before moving out into the southern tier of New York State. And, you know, I lived in a neighborhood that was actually smack dab in the middle of two well-known gang territories. And, you know, it was a neighborhood where, you know, things were changing. Harlem is changing quite a bit. You know, and there are things to celebrate about that, and there are things to lament about the changes that are going on in Harlem. But, you know, I get the sense when I moved into the neighborhood that perhaps it wasn't as active from a crime perspective as it had been in the past, but things did happen. You know, there were a couple of shootings that happened within a few months of my moving into the neighborhood. However, I knew that, you know, after a couple of months living there, when people got to know who I was, they got to see me, I would say hello to people, you know, they got to understand that I was part of the neighborhood. I knew that if anything were to happen to me in the neighborhood, it would be an accident, honestly speaking. You know, people get concerned about being shot and that sort of thing. And I just knew that if I happened to be walking home from, you know, I used to go out to lots of live music, and I'd be coming home at 2-3 o'clock in the morning in Harlem, right? And I'd have to walk home from the subway. You know, usually I did that rather than taking a cab. And I knew that if there was anything that happened to me, it would, because I accidentally got caught in the crossfire or something, they wouldn't be coming after me. So I guess when you're talking about crime, there's the crime where somebody comes in from outside to do harm to the people who are there, and then there's the crime that happens within the neighborhood. Do you have anything to say about folks making that kind of a distinction?
So the neighborhood that I live in currently, people who don't live in the neighborhood, I mean, it gets such a bad rap. But I love my neighborhood, and I love my neighbors, and I feel completely safe.
Yes.
So it's always a balance. You know, you don't know when crime is going to happen. You don't know what kind of crime is going to happen. You don't know if you are going to be the victim of a crime. You don't know these things. So I don't think, you know, things like the crime statistics, I don't think that they represent the totality of crime or potential crime. So
then it's important,
and it's always,
right, go ahead.
It's always up to the individual person to decide, is this a neighborhood that I'm going to feel safe in?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're not going to feel safe in a neighborhood, I'm not going to convince you to feel safe. I'm just not. Because I'm not going to be there, you know, if your car gets stolen in the middle of the night. You know, I'm not going to be there. You'll be there. So I'm never going to convince you about crime. If you don't feel safe, you don't feel safe, and we'll move on.
Right. So then you move on to another neighborhood. But then you're also saying that in terms of doing due diligence, your clients can look up the crime statistics and take them with a grain of salt that comes with that. Talk to the nosy neighbor, you know, go into the neighborhood, mm-hmm. see if folks will talk to you. You know, if you approach and everybody slams the door shut, that has to tell you something about the neighborhood and whether you want to be there. And then go at different times of the day and night to see what the neighborhood is like as well. That's all really great advice regarding, you know, crime in a neighborhood. There are other aspects of looking for a new place that I'm also interested in picking your brain about. When I'm looking at an apartment, for example, if one is looking at the sort of the details about the structure itself, I walk into an apartment and I want to look around and see whether this is a place that is going to be valuable. You know, it's going to give me back the return on investment in terms of the rent that I'm paying. What kinds of things am I looking for when I'm looking at the structure itself?
So this is a great topic because often when people are looking for a new place, they're looking at the aesthetics. However, as a realtor, when I go in, I'm like, okay, yes, this is beautiful, but my eye is tuned to look at the details. You know, I went to a place once with a client and everything looked beautiful. And as we were just sitting in the living room looking at the place, you know, she remarked, oh, you know what, it's really great here. I said, yes, but do you notice that the door handles and the hinges don't match on any of these doors? Neither do the faucets and the hardware on any of the cabinets. They don't match.
Okay.
So, and she had not noticed that. I said, well, that's why you use me as your realtor, because I will notice that. But that says to me that the person who, if it's new construction, they didn't really pay attention. And if this is a resale, I have to question what kind of maintenance they have done. You know, and that's, again, where a home inspection becomes paramount. Because I want to know what's really going on in this house. Is this just a homeowner that, you know, didn't really care about the knobs? And it could be. It very well could be. Or does this lead to a bigger issue? Does this lead to sloppy maintenance or no maintenance at all? You don't know, but a realtor is tuned to look at the fine details and to let you know these things.
So I'm a real novice in this area, and I'm not even sure what I'm looking for. So what are the kinds of things that folks who are, you know, and I'm not going to try to say that they're intentionally nefarious or anything like that, but what are the kinds of things that tend to be hidden? And how do you find those things?
So I am notorious for looking under things and looking in all the cabinets. I look at all the plumbing fixtures. I even look at the water heater and the furnace. And I am not, you know, a maintenance person, you know, that is trained to fix these things. But I can tell if there's something fishy about this. So you want to look at all those things, all the serviceable parts. You know, you want to look at the roof. Has it been recently replaced or will it need replacing? How long has it been on the house? You want to look at all the plumbing fixtures and, you know, have they had any problems with plumbing? And again, this is where you talk to the neighbors. The neighbors say, that basement flooded a couple times. But the owner might not tell you that, but the neighbor will.
Wow.
You want to look at you want to look at the floors. Has there been any replacement? You know, are the floors different colors? You know, I looked at one house, and as I was sitting there, I noticed that there was a crack in the floor leading from the countertop. And I said, oh, I bet their dishwasher leaked. And as we went around to the front and looked in front of the dishwasher, it was discolored in the front on the floor. So, yes, they've had a leak. Now, it didn't say anything in the listing, and the owner didn't say anything, but, yeah, we could tell that they had a leak. Now, when it was fixed or how long it went on, don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's where a home inspection comes in. You really want to be using a realtor because they are trained to look at those things, to find details that you may miss.
Right. Yes. So then what are the components of a home inspection? I mean, it's I guess, you know, different from having an engineer come in or an architect come in. I'm speculating, you know, what's the difference between having somebody come in and do a home inspection versus having an architect or an engineer come in to look at the house? What is enough? What's too much?
So a home inspection, the inspector will inspect every component of the house, every serviceable part. They will not fix anything. But if they find something wrong, they'll tell you. So if they look, they'll even look at the foundation. So if they find a crack in the foundation, they'll tell you, well, you might need to get, you know, a structural engineer out here to look at this. So they're not gonna, they're not trained to fix it, but they're trained to spot it. So if there's something wrong with the roof, they'll tell you, well, you need to get a roofer out here to take a look at this, because I think that there's something wrong, but I can't tell because I'm not a roofer.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the home inspector will just recommend that you have things looked at by a professional.
And then do you have any input in terms of when something is major enough to recommend walking away versus being able to say, it's a crack? You know, I'm thinking about cracks in walls, for example. That's one thing that I tend to notice, is if there's a crack in the wall or the crack in the ceiling, but I don't know what it means.
So if there is a crack in a wall or a ceiling or whatnot, and the home inspector says, hey, you know, you need to get somebody out here to look at that, so then you would ask the owner. Maybe they've had somebody look at it already, and they have the report. So then you get that information from the homeowner. The homeowner may have already said that up front, like, hey, you know, there's this crack there, but we have already had it looked at, and, you know, they said, you know, there's no problem. There's no foundation problem. The home is good to go. But anything that shows up on that home inspection, I recommend that you get a professional to look at. And they'll tell you, okay, so this is going to cost $10,000 to fix, and it needs to be fixed. So then you go to the owner and say, you know, hey, I need you to fix this because I'm not going to fix it. And if they're not willing to fix it or give you some sort of credit toward your purchase so that you can have that fixed, then I would recommend walking away.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care how much you love the house. I don't care how much you love the paint color. It doesn't matter. You know, that's $10,000 that you're going to have to spend down the line to fix.
And while we're talking about money, I'm also interested in talking a bit about the conventions of negotiating in the real estate arena. We live in a culture in which folks are not as accustomed to negotiating as perhaps in other cultures. I'm thinking about Asian cultures, African cultures. You know, we do a lot more bargaining and negotiating in those cultures. Here in the United States, you tend to walk into a place, this is the price, and that's the price you pay. Is that common also in real estate, or is there a different convention?
I don't know that concept.
Hmm.
Like, well, we're just going, oh, this is the price. Okay, well, here's a check. I don't know that. I don't know that price.
Uh-huh. Okay.
With my clients, I negotiate everything. There's sometimes it does make sense to pay full price. Sometimes it doesn't. I mean, I had a client who bought a house in the neighborhood. The house was a resale, so it was already constructed, and the person was selling it. They had, you know, the house refurbished, and they had put in some new appliances, but there was no refrigerator or stove.
Hmm.
So I looked at the prices in the neighborhood, and I thought, okay, so they're offering this at a good price. You know, so I think we can offer full price on this. But I said, if we offer full price, I'm going to need them to throw in a refrigerator, a stove, and a home warranty. And they did.
Wow. Okay.
They did.
Okay. So I'm seeing more and more of the value of having a realtor. When, you know, because these are things that I'm going to be honest, I'm a little naive. So these are things that I'm not necessarily thinking about in terms of what I can get for, you know, the value of what I'm investing in the property. And so does the same go for renting an apartment or renting a house? Can the rental price be negotiated?
So everything in life is negotiable.
Okay.
But it comes down to, so like here in Atlanta, competition is fierce. So even for apartments, you know, if you find an apartment or a house at a good rate, does it make sense to negotiate? I say yes, it does. So, and normally when I tell my clients who are renting a house, are you willing to sign, normally leases are 1 year, are you willing to sign a two-year lease? If they are, then I go in and say, hey, can you reduce the rent by this amount, and my client will sign a two-year lease.
So you're giving the landlord some assurance that they're going to have a good tenant for at least a couple of years in exchange for reducing the rent a little bit.
Absolutely. And most landlords would rather have a long-term stable tenant than having to go in every year and, you know, redo the place and then put it back on the market.
Okay. So that's something that's important for somebody who's listening to think about, especially if you're looking to rent a place. One of the ways that you might be able to reduce your rent is to offer stability to the landlord as well. What other points of negotiation might you suggest?
So if it's a rental, if you're not, so even if you're not willing to sign a two-year lease or you can't, offer to help with maintenance, you know, say I'll handle all the maintenance, you know, in exchange for a reduction in rent.
Mm-hmm.
Or just ask for a reduction in rent. What's the worst they can say? No, get out of my office.
And you just find yourself back in the place you were. This is right. This is true. Yes. What am I missing? You know, what questions am I not asking about the nitty-gritty? I mean, and we've turned to, you know, the more concrete aspects of renting for a moment, because I did want to have an opportunity for my listeners to get your expertise on that. And then I do want to come back to putting that back together with the more aspirational aspects of things, which are just as important to a person's experience living in a place. But when it comes to the concrete things, what questions have I not asked?
So when it gets down to finding a new place, I think it's more about not what you're asking, you know, the other person. It's more about what you need to be asking yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I doing this? You know, what do I hope to achieve by moving to this area or this place or this house or this apartment? You know, what's the point? You always have to ask yourself, what's the point? And then if you make promises to yourself, keep them. You know, say, I'm going to move to this house because I want to get out more. I want to be more outgoing. I want to have more friends. Okay, then keep those promises to yourself. And the way to keep those promises is to get other people involved, to have some accountability. You know, tell your friends, hey, we're going to go out every other Friday night. So then then you have some accountability because you know that you're going out every Friday night.
I see. So then the value of the accountability is that you actually fulfill the promise of why you moved to that particular place.
Right.
Okay. That's excellent. Well, listen, I think the folks in Atlanta are very lucky to have access to you. I'm feeling bad for everybody else at the moment. But if folks are in Atlanta and they're looking to move, how can they contact you?
So I love for people to check out my Facebook page, and it is Anderson W. St. James. A lot of my clients are on my Facebook page because I have a business page, but, you know, I like to interact with them in real time, in real life. You know, I like to be very candid with my clients. And the best way to get to know me is looking at my Facebook page. The person that you see online is the same person you're going to meet in person. You can call me directly, and I like to answer my own phone. It's 678-613-3381. You can get me on Twitter or Instagram or any of those other grams.
Okay, good. You know, you've brought up something that's really important, which I think a lot of people don't think about when they are looking for a new place, is that when you decide to take on the services of a realtor, fit is important there too. This is also a relationship, and it would be great to be able to sustain that relationship through the process of actually renting or purchasing a home, right? So you want to have a good fit. What do you look for in a client that tells you that this is going to be a good fit?
So I look for clients who are ready to be honest with me and with themselves, and who are ready for someone who's going to be perfectly candid with them, somebody who is going to be end up being their BFF.
Yes. Right. And again, you do take that time. I mean, how does that work in terms of your business? I would have thought that, you know, with realtors, a lot of success depends on volume. At least that's the impression that I have. And so it sounds like you are managing a balance between volume on the one hand and taking time with your clients. I mean, you said you go and you hang out with them. You might go to, you know, grab some coffee or hang out at a bar with them. How do you find time for all of that?
So my business is a lot based on referral. You know, people have worked with me and they'll tell other people, hey, you need Anderson. And that's what I like to hear. And I don't have, you know, say, an answering service or, say, other people in my office who are going to handle, you know, your business. When you hire me as your realtor, you get me one-on-one.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's
and
amazing.
I am always on the go. So, like, I answer my phone at 2 and 3 in the morning because I'm up.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, now this is a whole nother show, but how do you do that?
Oh, my God, I have no idea. I have no idea how I do the things that I do.
Well, you must really love what you do, which is really important for somebody who's seeking out your services. I mean, you must really be really enthusiastic and into what you do as a realtor.
You will not find another person who loves what they do more than me.
Huh.
I mean, I love it, you know. I hate the word amazing. You know, people always say, oh, well, this is amazing, that's amazing, that sweater is amazing. You know, the thought of nuclear war, that's amazing.
Ah!
I hate that word, but I'm very passionate about what I do, and you want to pick a realtor who is just as passionate about your move as you are.
As you are. This is so true. If there's any key thing that you have said through this show, I think that's the one where I would want to really focus on. You know, you want to find somebody who is as dedicated to your well-being in terms of where you live as you are. That's really amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I used the word. That's fabulous. Can I say fabulous? We'll say that that's fabulous.
I love the word fabulous.
Okay. So one last thing then. If I, let's say we're happy, and I'm not, because, you know, there's somebody listening who needs to know that I'm not contemplating a breakup here, but if I were in the midst of a breakup and looking for someplace to move to, in Atlanta, and I know that you get into the details of the individual's wants and their needs and that sort of thing, but for a person who has gone through a breakup, who needs to find a life where they can get out and meet new people and have a fabulous time, where would you suggest that somebody move to in Atlanta?
So my very, very favorite place in Atlanta, even for me, if I was going to move, this is where I would move to. It's Atlantic Station. And
okay.
It's Atlantic Station because it's a walkable area. And not just Atlantic Station, but 12 Atlantic Station, which is a hotel that offers residences. And I love the fact that I could pull in, park my car, and I could walk everywhere, to the grocery store, to the movies, shopping. And because people come from – it's a destination in Atlanta, you'll meet tons of people from all over. So it's a great way to kind of get out of your comfort zone, but then if it gets overwhelming, you can retreat back to your condo.
Right.
So you can as much or as little as you want.
That's, you know, an important distinction to make. If you're in your car all the time, you're not meeting people.
Yep.
right? You have to get out there, get on the street, walk, you know, go to the grocery store, you know, go to the bookstore, whatever it is that that area has to offer. And it sounds like it's a lot that there is to offer. But in terms of starting a new life, getting new friends, taking on a new point of view, that sounds like the kinds of things that anybody should be looking for in any city that they're moving to if they're going through a breakup. But I'm glad to know specifically if you're in Atlanta or if you're contemplating moving to Atlanta, that's the place that you want to go.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wonderful. Well, Anderson, thank you so very much for coming on the show. I am, again, proud and happy to be the host who brings you into the world of media with your first appearance on an online radio show. You've been wonderful. I so appreciate the knowledge that you have shared with me and with my listeners, and I wish you the best of success.
Well, thank you so much. And if anybody needs me, Anderson W. St. James on Facebook.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, please do look up Anderson if you are going to the Atlanta area. I'm going to continue to encourage him to perhaps write a book or write a guide for people who are looking for new places that is based on his approach to doing things. Like, again, I certainly wish that I had had him available when I went through my own breakup experience and needed to find a new place where I could feel nurtured and return to wholeness. You know, the neighborhood that one is in, the home that one occupies in that situation can do so much to add or detract from the healing process when going through a breakup. So I'm grateful for having come across Anderson St. James in Atlanta, the lifestyle realtor. I want to tell you a little bit about what's coming up next week. I'm inviting Dr. Deanne Killian to the show. She is a certified She's a certified life coach and a certified trainer in nonviolent communication. And so we're going to talk about what nonviolent communication means. It doesn't mean exactly what you think it means, I'm suspecting. So tune in to find out what we mean by nonviolent communication and how that can be applied to a situation where you are contemplating a breakup, where you are going through a breakup. Perhaps you went through a breakup and things didn't go so well and you'd like some closure. And this might be an approach, nonviolent communication might be an approach that allows you to be able to achieve that. Deanne is also hosting a workshop at Cornell University on June 12th and 13th. I'd like to encourage you to come out if you're going to be in the area or to make it a destination. Cornell University is located in beautiful Ithaca, New York, in upstate New York, in the Finger Lakes region. And so it's an especially gorgeous time of year in June. So I'd encourage folks to come out. For information about how to attend her workshop, visit her website, workcollaboratively.com. Workcollaboratively is one word, .com. And you can go to the events tab on her website and find the event. If you scroll down a little bit, it's there. Cornell University, June 12th through 13th. She's going to be talking about how to get things done in difficult situations and with difficult people. I've been to Deanne's workshops before. I'm going to this workshop myself because she really is that good. She's going to be helping me improve my own skills, so I recommend her 100%. Well, thanks again, everyone, for listening to the show, for tuning in. I hope that you tune in again next week. And then we have more wonderful shows planned for the rest of June and into July. So look at our Facebook page, Untangled 123 Untangled on Facebook to see what's coming up. If you have any questions, post them there. If you have suggestions for guests, I'm always happy to find new guests for the show. So let me know what you'd like to hear about and who you'd like to hear from. I wish you a wonderful week. It's a holiday week here in the United States. So for those of you who are with your families, I hope that you have a safe and restful holiday. We do want to honor the memory of folks who have given their lives in service to our nation, and to also at the same time hope that we finally reach a place where that service, that kind of service, is no longer necessary. Have a wonderful week. I'll see you on the radio next Sunday at 7. Take care. Bye-bye.